A Breakfast Huddle with Elliot Danker, Yasmin Yonkers, and Ryan Huang. Replay from Money FM 89.3.
Good morning. Now, what can we expect from markets today? With the decline of the Dow overnight and US crude prices falling for 11 straight session, its longest losing streak on record, we have Stephen Innes, Head of Trading at Asia Pacific at Awanda, to give us the bigger picture. Good morning, Stephen.
Hi, Brian. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thanks. U.S. markets closed broadly lower overnight, now led by the tech sector. You've got stocks like Amazon, which are down as much as 20%. What's driving the correction, Stephen? Is it a case of sector rotation with investors taking profits, or is there more to it? Perhaps the start of a longer-term correction?
I think there's a lot to it here. I think we're seeing risk aversion flooding back into the fray. And what I mean by risk aversion is we're starting to see this toxic combination of political risk rear its ugly head in Europe again with the Italy budget coming to the fore. We've also got trade wars that remain front and center. The U.S.-China spat doesn't appear to be resolving itself anytime soon. I expect that to play out quite extensively with the year ahead. And obviously, this tech sector has such far-reaching implications because these shares are so widely held by the investment community that any time we see a wobble, especially on Apple, for instance, overnight, that fell off the cliff, dropping 5%, this has far-reaching implications across the globe, especially when you consider here in Asia, a lot of these components are manufactured by companies in China and in Taiwan, for instance. So we're looking for local equity markets to tumble in the wake of this recent U.S. equity rout.
So where do you think the smart money is going to?
Well, it's hard to argue with the money going right into the U.S. Treasuries, even though if we factor inflation into the equation, they're only yielding 7%. But historically, if you look at stock S&P gains, that's not that bad of a return, really, in historical sense. I think what's happened here is investors have become far too complacent with equity gains over the past year and expecting these things just never to give up. But we're of the opinion, or at least I'm of the opinion, that tax reform inputs are going to start weighing. Whether that happens now, whether that happens in early 2019, I think we have to be prepared for that eventuality.
But, you know, Stephen, taking your earlier assertion about risk aversion, you have now emerging markets looking awfully cheap. Is that where potentially investors could get a better return on their money?
Well, I'm always of the opinion that they're cheap for a reason. And the reason why they're cheap is because the markets are not supportive of risk. I think what's happening when we see bouts of risk aversion, I think there's specific targets. And I think the weaker links in the chain, which are probably related to Asia, especially when the U.S. dollar starts to strengthen, there tends to be a lack of inflow into Asia capital markets. I use this term that the U.S. dollar acts like a wrecking ball through Asia when it strengthens. And I think this is what holds back investors and why even although pockets do appear undervalued, I think until we get trade wars cleared, I think this risk is going to remain negative. So I think this is why investors aren't jumping in, even although there's some huge discounts available in emerging markets. The fear of the stronger U.S. dollar is keeping them sidetracked.
Okay, let's talk about the U.S. dollar. And, you know, it's been on the driver's seat, especially after the FOMC last week confirmed December's essentially rate hike. Aren't investors also concerned on its impact on earnings and margins, especially since 40% of the S&P 500 earnings literally come from outside the U.S.? What's your read on this?
Yeah, of course. That's one of the other factors that could play out negatively over the medium term, especially as the U.S. dollar persists. But the stronger dollar in itself is actually a financial drag, and this is the other concern. If we start looking at the financial drag in the sense that it tightens up financial conditions in the U.S. So when these conditions get tighter because of the U.S. dollar, it also weighs on equity markets. So you get the combination of both equity market and equity market losses compounded by a stronger dollar. It even tightens the financial conditions. So this is one thing we have to be aware of. And I think this is one thing on top of everything else that's going to weigh on equity markets. Indeed, because a lot of these profits are held offshore. Fortunately, they got a reprieve on the tax grandfathering. So that's really helped out. But this is going to evaporate, and this is the point that we're trying to make. So we'll have to really be cognizant of how this plays out in light of this stronger U.S. dollar.
And how will the stronger U.S. dollar then impact emerging market currencies in the region? Do you see then regional markets being forced to up interest rates then?
Well, here's the problem. You tighten interest rates to support your dollar, okay, to support your currency, it plays out negatively on GDP. That's the first thing. You know, how do you want to address this? Do you want to defend your currency at all costs, or do you want to stimulate your economy? I think there is concern on both fronts, but I think the driving factor in the face of potentially a drop in global growth simply because of these trade wars, I think there's going to be an inflection point where local central banks who do want to defend their currency will probably side on the dovish stance. For instance, if we're looking at a regional counterparty to the extreme on this view, would be Malaysia, the Bank Negara, where, you know, because of a lot of political risk, lack of infrastructure spending and what have you, are now coming off what appeared to be a tangent to hike interest rates. Now that we've seen their GDP wobble in Q2, they're actually going to start dropping rates. Will this happen across the system? Well, we don't know that. We have to wait and see. But certainly, I don't think we're going to have any hawkish overtones from local central banks because of this possible downturn in global growth narrative.
Now, Stephen, let's move on a little bit to oil prices. They were expected to rebound, you know, when the Saudis announced that they were going to cut production in December. However, the losing streak for oil has continued. I mean, 11 straight sessions of losses. It's never happened before in 30 years of contracts. Give us a sense of what's really happening in oil markets.
Well, there's a lot of noise in oil, and, you know, that's just part and parcel to trading this very, very high-risk asset. Last night, President Trump took to the podium and admonished Saudi Arabia not to cut oil output, as OPEC's leaders are currently tussling with oversupply concerns. Now, where did this oversupply come from? Well, I think President pulled one of the best sleight of hands at some time. He actually persuaded Saudi Arabia and the rest of OPEC to add supplies to the markets ahead of the Iran sanctions. And then days before the Iran sanctions, he offered way more concessions than what the market was anticipating. So this is the result of the glut. But now, on top of this, what we're dealing with are two developing narratives. One, we have U.S. shale production that has just gone ahead of Russia. The U.S. are now the global leaders in supply, and they are expected to increase supply. If we factor that in with the fact that bottlenecks getting oil from the Permian Basin, where most of the oil is produced in the drilled in the U.S., to shipping lanes in Louisiana. This is a pipeline that goes from the Permian Basin to Louisiana, which has bottlenecks getting the oil there. These issues are going to be ironed out over the next 6 months to 1 year, and this will even provide more supply to the market. On the flip side, we have Russia. Now, Russia has been compliant with reducing production, or at least capping production. Now, with the U.S. likely to eat into their share, how compliant is Russia going to be with production cuts? This is what's weighing on oil markets, an oversupply and a possible downturn in the global growth and the global economy. This plays out quite negatively for oil, and this is why oil markets remain in bearish territory.
Thank you very much for your insight, Stephen. We've been speaking to Stephen Innes, Head of Trading Asia Pacific at Awanda, on The Bigger Picture.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.